The U.S. economy slows to a crawl.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open. A look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, in the first quarter of this year, the U.S. economy grew at a rate of just 1.8%. Why are we slowing down and what can we do to speed up? But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are mixed this morning. The Dow is up 13 points at 12,704. The Nasdaq down about 0.1%, and the S&P 500 basically flat. The number of people filing for first-time unemployment benefits jumped last week by about 25,000 to 429,000. That's the highest weekly level since January. Now let's get to this morning's GDP number, 1.8% growth in the first 3 months of this year. You can compare that to 3.1% growth that was in the previous quarter. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and she's with us live now from Chicago, as she is each Thursday. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Well, it sure seems to me like we're moving in the wrong direction here.
Well, certainly the dirt is in the details, and although we all expected the slowdown in the headline number, we didn't expect some of the weakness that we saw in the figure this year, this month. Consumer spending slowed from the fourth quarter. Expect that. Gas prices were higher, but still spending a little bit out there. But on a more negative note, government spending absolutely collapsed, and part of that is less transitory than one would like. We saw defense spending collapse. Well, we know that's going to come back. We're fighting multiple fronts and wars in multiple countries. But beyond that, the spending by the federal government on fiscal stimulus is playing out, and at the state and local level. We've seen all those headlines. We've seen the backlash. The cuts are deep, and we're beginning to feel them, and those aren't likely to go away anytime soon. That's a real headwind for the U.S. economy going forward.
Diane, what can we do to turn this around?
Well, the key is what the cash that's on corporate balance sheets. We still have an enormous amount of cash on corporate balance sheets that's yet to be redeployed. And what we need is high enough confidence among those corporations. And we are now seeing many institutional investors, pensioners, getting on their boards and saying, give it back to us in a dividend or redeploy it, reemploy or reinvest. All those things would help the U.S. economy to pick up a little bit. But let's face it, we're coming out of a very deep hole, and there is no easy out. Otherwise, we would have shot that silver bullet.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, we've got earnings this morning from ExxonMobil. The oil giant has had its best quarter since 2008, more than $10 billion in profits. Things are so swell for the oil companies right now, in fact, that some in Washington want those companies to live without tax breaks. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports on how that would affect them.
They don't set the high prices, but oil companies sure do enjoy them. Some think industry earnings this year could rival 2008. That's when ExxonMobil earned $45 billion, an all-time high for a listed U.S. company. Now the White House wants to end oil and gas tax breaks and to spend that money on clean energy. Thing is, repealing subsidies won't hurt the big bad multinationals so much as the small independent drillers, says Charles Ebinger at the Brookings Institution.
There's a lot of people don't realize that it's not the big integrated companies that find most of the domestic oil in the United States, it's the independents.
And for all the talk of obscene profits, they tend not to last. 3 years ago, record crude prices freaked out consumers and demand collapsed. Barbara Shook at Energy Intelligence Group sees those signs again.
I think every one of these oil companies is concerned about demand destruction. They don't want to see the consumer switch to a more efficient vehicle.
For now, though, it's a great first quarter. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by IBM, working to help mid-sized businesses become the engines of a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/engines. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by Manta.com, providing an online destination for small businesses to be found and to find new customers. More online at Manta.com.
If you're heading to the movie theaters this weekend, get ready to pay up whether the movie is good or bad. The average ticket price around the country is now more than $8 and rising, a lot higher in some places, according to the National Association of Theater Owners. And LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus doesn't think that makes any sense at all. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've got a problem with the ticket prices that we're paying. What's the problem?
Well, let's not say it's a problem with the ticket prices per se. I've got a problem with the movies that are being released. Most of them just aren't very good. But I still love going to the movies.
Yep.
So the question here is it possible to price tickets in a way that is reflective of demand for the film? And this isn't a breakthrough idea because Ticketmaster has just announced they're going to do this with concerts and sporting events, whereby the demand for the tickets is going to adjudicate how much they're going to cost. So a Lady Gaga ticket, lots. The Osmond Brothers reunion tour, not so much.
Wouldn't pay so much. Is there any chance of something like that happening with movie tickets?
Well, you know, it could be. I mean, look at the economics of this right now. Many tickets, at least here in Southern California, can cost over $10.
Sure.
Nationwide average, about $8. A family of four drops about $60 when they go to the movies. That's a big chunk of change, especially at a time when everyone's got a widescreen TV and a Netflix subscription.
Right.
So it kind of changes the economics of it. So why not price movie tickets according to the demand?
Well, isn't there a possibility, if that were to happen, that we would end up paying more than the $10 that we pay now for a movie?
Yes, indeed. And that's a good thing because it's an incentive for the movie studios to put out good quality fare. For example, would I have paid, say, $20 a ticket to go see Avatar in 3D? You betcha. I thought that was a terrific cinematic experience. The other day, though, I saw Sex and the City 2 on HBO. I feel terrible for anybody who saw that stinker at movie theater for top dollar.
You wouldn't have paid $20 for that one.
Not a chance. But had it been priced at $6, $7 because of lower demand for these tickets, yeah, maybe I would have gone to see it at the big screen.
Well, we'll see if your perfect world for movie tickets comes true. LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And finally, a very stubborn husband and wife in New York City have been granted a long-awaited divorce. I say stubborn because this couple filed for divorce back in 2005, and when they weren't given one right away, they built a wall through the middle of their house. Neither one of them wanted to move out. Well, now they'll both have to. The judge ordered them to sell their brownstone, wall and all, and split the proceeds. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
A lot of American universities are expanding their brands into the Middle East, the Persian Gulf in particular. It's about as cost-effective as you can get.
The Gulf countries offer essentially a free ride.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Gulf states give the phrase tuition assistance a whole new meaning. We'll have the day's business news as well next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.